Hello and welcome to the Training Tidbits podcast series. I'm your host, Ryan Cartledge, and it is wonderful to have you along today for what's set to be another really fun and inspiring conversation. I can't wait to get started and dive in. We have some really great topics we're going to cover and an amazing guest on the show today who is going to share her experiences with us. If you haven't listened to the other episodes yet, make sure to go and check them out. You can find them at www.animaltrainingacademy.com or you can additionally download them all directly from iTunes. As well. There's hours worth of audio there for you to consume, covering a huge array of different species, behaviors, countries, peoples, and vocations. Over time, we've had some amazing guests on the show and some truly inspiring stories. The first podcast was released on the 4th of January this year, 2016. And so not quite, but I've nearly managed to record an episode every 2 weeks since then. And we've just surpassed over 9,300 downloads from the website in that time. I'd love to pass 10,000 before the end of the year, so please feel free to share this episode far and wide. It would be greatly appreciated. On today's episode, we are going to be talking to Annika Nazarov, whom I had the pleasure of meeting when both her and I interned with Natural Encounters and the Birds of the World show in Dallas, Texas back in 2012. Annika Nazarov has always been passionate about animals, but it was not until she entered the exotic animal training and management program at Moore Park College that she discovered her ideal career. Having a fair amount of experience working with animals, but little to no experience training them, Annika was immediately captivated by the science behind an application of positive reinforcement training, and she became dedicated to using this type of training to enhance the welfare of animals. Upon graduating from Moore Park, Annika took a position at Six Flags Discovery Kingdom in California, where she worked predominantly with Californian sea lions, Pacific harbor seals, and Asian small clawed otters. From there, she traveled to Austria, where she worked at the Animal Training Center with a variety of animals ranging from marmosets and wallabies to horses and dogs, training animals for wildlife education shows and teaching people about training through chicken camps were just a few of the opportunities that Annika had while working at the ATC. Annika then returned to school to obtain a master's degree in animal behavior and conservation from Hunter College in New York City. During this time, she was involved in multiple research projects studying wild dolphins, both in the Bahamas and in France, but her interest in animal training never lessened, and positive reinforcement training became the focus of her master's thesis. All of this education and experience led Annika to her current position as the manager of animal training at Maymont, a zoological facility in Richmond, Virginia. In this role, Annika has the opportunity to facilitate the design and implementation of training programs for a wide range of animals, including black bears, bison, screech owls, and aquatic turtles, along many others. Whether Annika is studying or working, she strives to stay current in the animal training field and frequently attends conferences and workshops, such as the Animal Behavior Management Alliance Annual Conference, Karen Pryor's Clicker Expo, and Steve Martin and Dr. Susan Friedman's Contemporary Animal Training and Management Workshop. So without further ado, it's my great pleasure to welcome to the show Annika Nazarov. How are you today, Annika?
I am fantastic. Thank you, Ryan.
Awesome. Hey, let's tear into the first question. For this one, I was wondering if you could take us back and talk more about your learning odyssey that I've run through quickly in the introduction, specifically some of the earliest animals you ever trained, and maybe more about your experience attending Moore Park College, including a little bit about the college, maybe for those who don't know.
Sure. Yeah, I'd love to. So as mentioned, the beginning of my animal training experience came at Moore Park. Prior to that, I had dogs as I was growing up, but you know, I had an older brother who kind of liked to sabotage my training anytime I was doing something with one of my dogs, so kind of gave up on that pretty quickly. So it wasn't until I went to Moore Park that I really had the chance to dive in and try to train an animal myself. So as other listeners might have heard on some of the earlier podcasts, one of the first animals that you do train at Moore Park College is a rat. We would have to train a rat to go through, we would call it a maze, but really it was more kind of an obstacle course, not kind of that typical type of maze that you see in laboratory experiments. My rat had the pleasure of learning to ride up an elevator. I had quite a complex little obstacle course for her to go through, and it was quite a challenge as a new trainer to try to figure out how to make all of those obstacles positive for her and encourage her to go through the whole thing. And not only that, but then to be graded and timed on her performance getting through that obstacle course. So it definitely put some pressure on it, but it was a great experience. And that was just the beginning of learning to train the animals there. At Moore Park, depending on your grades and your participation in a lot of different activities, you are assigned different animals that you get to work with, not just to feed them, but to train them I worked really hard to get the animals that in my mind were the most interesting ones to train. So I had the opportunity to work with a sea lion and a vervet monkey, a raccoon, pot-bellied pig. It was quite a list. We had to train animals from different categories, primates, hoofstock, carnivores, and herbivores. So it really gave you a wide variety of experience training different types of animals. But something important about Moorpark that might not have been touched on thus far is the experiences that you get outside of the school itself. Moorpark is designed to give their students experience at different zoos in the area. So we have to do day-long internships in different zoo strings at both the Los Angeles Zoo and the Santa Barbara Zoo. So it's a great opportunity for the students to go to other functioning facilities and see what it's like to really get in there and work along with the zookeepers. And then on top of that, we also do longer internships. We call them projects. And so those projects allow us to go to other potentially companies, facilities, whatever is really piquing your interest in the vast variety of options that you have in terms of working with animals, you could potentially go and do a project with the facility doing that work. For instance, some people will go and do projects with movie and TV businesses or with the guide dog company in San Francisco, for example. And I had the opportunity to go do an internship with Dolphin Quest. So I was able to see the functioning of an interactive dolphin facility. Then I also did an internship at Marine World, used to be Marine World, now it is Six Flags Discovery Kingdom. And that actually led to me getting a position there, which Ryan already mentioned. So these projects really are an amazing resource for the students at Moorpark College to really get a sense of what's going on out there in the industry.
Hey, thanks so much for sharing that, Annika. I absolutely love learning about everyone's stories and experiences. I find them fascinating to listen to. And in your behavioral odyssey, you've worked really hard and been additionally really fortunate to travel around a lot and get to spend time in many different facilities and organizations. I was wondering now if you could tell everyone listening a little bit more about some of your other experiences, including your current role as manager of animal training at Maymont, and maybe some of your most memorable stories or experiences from places such as Six Flags or the Animal Training Center.
Sure, I'd love to. I think that I might start from the beginning, work forward in the Odyssey, possibly starting at Six Flags Discovery Kingdom. I did go there right out of Moorpark. It was a great transition going from a school where I was learning about all different types of animals to going to somewhere where I was working primarily with three specific species. So I had time to delve into all of the specifics and information that I could find about those species and really get to know them at a depth. While I was there, I was doing entertainment shows and also interaction programs where people would get to come and learn about these species, kind of get up close and personal with them. It was a great time for me to hone my training skills and experiment with these different species that I was working with. Because I was a newer trainer there, I had a lot of opportunities to kind of sit back and watch the more experienced trainers training. One of my kind of most memorable experiences from that time of my life was seeing the relationship that some of these more experienced trainers had with these animals. One of our sea lions actually broke his jaw while I was there, which I can only imagine is incredibly painful. And the animal stopped eating and was seeming very uncomfortable. And he still participated in training sessions and allowed the veterinarian to come and x-ray his jaw, even while he had a broken jaw and wasn't eating fish. It's just incredible to see those instances of the relationship between an animal and trainer and how that can really facilitate taking care of the animal better and helping them. And similarly, sea lions are quite prone to having eye issues. So we did have some animals that were developing cataracts, and one of the animals, it was definitely bothering him a lot more. And so we have wonderful veterinarians at the facility itself, but then also other veterinarians coming in from other places who possibly are, you know, more skilled with ophthalmology and all of that. And so they come to try to help with this particular case. The sea lion who is being exposed to all of these different stimuli, sometimes it's not possible to train for every scenario, every kind of stimulus that they might encounter. Again, just that super solid core base relationship between that trainer and that animal that allowed these procedures to occur and for us to help that animal and and improve their quality of life. So those were some of the great experiences that I had at Six Flags. From there, I did go out to Austria, which was fantastic. And I was working at the animal training center there. Anna Oblasser-Mutrel is the owner of the company, and she and I actually went to Moor Park together. It was amazing to watch somebody go through the Moor Park program and then go back to her home country and start a business from the ground up, starting small, doing little things like flying pigeons for weddings, anything that can kind of bring in a little bit of business, but then growing it from there and starting to focus on the things that are really important. So doing wildlife education shows and being able to bring animals in and teach children about them, helping with zoo animal training and trying to incorporate things that are not really in use over there in Europe as much. Her company has grown so much that she's now also training diabetic alert dogs and changing people's lives that way, those diabetics that she's helping with those service dogs. It's a life-changing experience for them. While I was there working at the animal training center, I was helping to train animals wherever it was needed. I was able to help train rats for movies, and we would do what was called llama trekkings. People would come out and get to go on these hikes with llamas. So that's wonderful, but of course the llamas need to actually be able to carry the saddles to be able to carry the people's equipment with them as we were going. And so I was able to saddle train a llama for the wildlife education shows that I mentioned. We would use all sorts of animals for that. And so I would do things like harness train the skunks to make sure that we could keep them safe as we took them out for those shows. So it was really great. It exposed me to not only a wide variety of different animals that I had never worked with, but it also gave me the opportunity to do things on a different timeline. So, you know, if those rats need to be trained for a movie tomorrow, I had very little time to get them ready for that. So it was a great experience in terms of my training skills being honed. But it was also a wonderful time for me to work there because Anna was starting to develop chicken camps. I don't know if you've discussed chicken camps at all, but Bob Bailey, a very well-known trainer, he developed chicken camps as a way to teach people how to train. The reason that he used chickens is that they are very quick at learning. Not only do they learn when you've done the correct thing, but they also learn when you've made a mistake. They will take that mistake and run with it. It really helps people to develop their training skills because you learn when you've made a mistake or when you've done something correctly. Anna developed a very similar program. She has groups of people come to her facility, and also we take the chicken camps to other facilities. So the chicken camp that I specifically helped with was at the Wolf Science Center. This is a research facility in Austria, and they're publishing a lot of studies about wolves and dogs and interactions between those animals and people. And so a lot of different researchers are coming to the center with such a wide range of people. Frequently, English is the common language that people are speaking there. So it was really neat for me to be able to step in as a native English speaker to help out with that chicken camp. It's really fascinating to be able to watch people work with the chickens and make a lot of progress and learn so much in just a few days. And so I guess that brings us up to my current position at Maymont. We have a little bit of schooling in the middle there, but we can talk about that in a minute. So at Maymont now, I am the manager of animal training. My main role is really to help our staff learn how to train animals and then to see that they go out and do that. You know, my first challenge was with a staff of people who have such varied backgrounds, not only in terms of animals that they worked with, but also just in terms of their understanding and proficiency with training. I had to try to get everybody onto the same wavelength in terms of training. I developed what I call Training Tuesday. I wish it were actually every Tuesday, but unfortunately we don't get to do it every Tuesday. But Training Tuesday is basically a chance for me to give them as much information as I can about training. The first Training Tuesdays were definitely a lot of basics, just talking about positive reinforcement, negative reinforcement, all of the differences between those, clarifying terminology. And then how do you train a behavior, going through shaping, very similar to all the things that Ryan, you have online now and all the resources that you have for people to learn about training. I kind of have my own version of that. I have all of my staff go through these Training Tuesday lectures. And then we also get out there in the field and I'll do training demonstrations so that they get that chance to just see what is a training session like. For someone who hasn't ever trained an animal, being able to just observe is a really important thing to do. And then also games. It's so important to be able to practice your training skills without an animal involved so that there isn't that pressure of having the animal right in front of you and potentially frustrating them or whatnot if you're not reinforcing properly. So we're able to go through some of those skills with each other and really improve our timing and our observational skills and all of that. I started the training Tuesdays to get everybody up and running. And then I know, Ryan, you've done a lot with training plans. So we go through our training plans so that they can really start to think through each behavior. And then we get out there and we get training. So we have quite a few very fun animals at Maymont. We focus on native Virginia wildlife. We have things ranging from black bears and bison to bobcat, gray fox, lots of raptors. But we also have a children's farm with goats and sheep and chickens. And then we also have a nature center with turtles, fish, snakes, all sorts of animals there. I typically have our animal keepers start training a goat because I find goats to be really great animals to learn with. They're definitely very food motivated for the most part. So they're able to really get right in there and have that experience with quick progress, but learning great skills as you're going, even just with proper feeding methods and not letting the goat dive into your treat pouch and all of that kind of stuff. So yes, I try to get the staff up and running. Then I also try to take it a little bit beyond just the staff. I also try to reach out to our guests to teach our guests about training as well. We do have training demonstrations with some of our animals. And then I also have a program called Animal Training Adventures, where our guests can actually come and learn about positive reinforcement training, how we do it, why we do it, what the benefits are. And then they actually get to come out with me and train some of our animals. So they get to go into the vulture exhibit with me and have the vulture get onto a scale and touch a target pole. They get to work with our chickens and do color discrimination tasks and have our aquatic turtle come and go to a specific station. I really enjoy that program because it's a great way to get people involved with training and to really see how fun it can be and how rewarding it is for the animals.
That sounds fantastic, Annika. And maybe just touch on quickly, that's something I'm quite passionate about, the value of showing visitors at zoos animal training.
I can't overemphasize how important I think it is. It's a little bit disheartening to me sometimes how many people still come and think that we are forcing the animal to participate in something or thinking that we are not taking good care of the animals. And so the more that we can show them how this is something that the animal just lights up about doing, I get so much good feedback from people when they are able to see the bobcat climb up a tree and really exhibit those natural behaviors and how excited he is to do it. There's definitely no deprivation going on there. And I think the more that we can engage with people, the better, for sure. I guess one of my favorite stories recently was I was working with our black vultures and doing just such a simple training session, literally just targeting. And I was talking with guests as I was doing it. And after I left the enclosure, I hear this little girl say to her mother, "Mom, I love vultures." That is exactly why I do these things. Vultures who typically have such a bad rap and people think they're ugly and disgusting and all of that. And here's this little girl who has this new love for these creatures. Just because I was able to bring those animals close to her and for her to see them engage in something, I think really changed her outlook on it. So that's why I'm in this. That's what I love.
And what they call those defining moments, I believe.
Absolutely.
Kids remember for the rest of their lives. And hopefully those kids go home and apply the same principles with their cats and dogs.
Absolutely.
All of that sounds great, Annika, and I want to come to Training Tuesday.
Okay.
Sounds like a lot of fun. And I'm sure of all the experience that you have that there must be way more stories where those come from. And I hope before the end of the podcast, we'll get a chance to hear some more. For now, though, we will move on because I'm fascinated to learn more, as I'm sure everyone listening is, about your thesis research that you conducted a number of years ago under the guidance of Dr. Diana Reese and Dr. Susan Friedman. Now, not only did you get to assist with research about wild dolphins, but you also conducted research on a chicken's choice, positive reinforcement training versus free food, a study investigating domestic hens' preferences for positive reinforcement training. Can you tell us more about your experiences here?
Yes, I would love to. While I was at Hunter College, which is in New York City, I had the opportunity to see a lot of research that I wouldn't have seen otherwise, particularly with dolphins in the wild. So that was a fantastically fun experience, but unrelated in the long run to what I really wanted to be looking at, which was how animals react to positive reinforcement training. A lot lot of studies are being done these days about the effects of positive reinforcement trainings, hopefully positive effects, but potentially negative effects, depending on the findings. Most of the studies, though, have focused on the behavioral or physiological responses of the animals. And so I wanted to try to look at the preferential response of the animal to the training session. So kind of asking the question of, is this actually something that the animals would choose to participate in? In order to try to look at that question, I was coming at it from the viewpoint of contra freeloading, which is the phenomenon where an animal will actually work for food, even though that identical food is freely available at the same time. This idea that an animal will work for the food really kind of goes against optimal foraging theories, saying that an animal will expend as little energy as possible in order to get the resources that it needs. The question is, why would an animal choose to expend more energy when they don't need to? And so there are different theories about why that might be. Possibly the animal is gaining more information about their environment, and so that information in and of itself has value for them to use later on because they are living in a constantly changing environment, and so they need to have as much information about their surroundings as possible. And coming at it from a learning and behavior perspective, as the animal is foraging for food, there are all of these other potential reinforcers in the environment. If you think of a rat pressing a lever in order for a pellet to drop out, the sound of that pellet dropping out could potentially become a secondary reinforcer because they start to associate it with the presentation of that food. And so having not only the primary reinforcer of the food, but also the secondary reinforcer of the sound, that combination means that getting a pellet that's dropped out of a hopper is actually more reinforcing than just eating the food out of the bowl. I thought to myself, is it possible to see whether a positive reinforcement training session could be used as the work that the animal needs to do in order to get the food, and then to use that to have that in comparison with just food being freely available? So it was a little bit challenging to design this study because most contra freeloading studies are done where the animal has free access to both types of situations at once. So either they have a lever to press where they can get food, or they have that food just sitting in a bowl and they're just kept in this environment for hours, days, whatever the study prescribes. But that's not necessarily possible with a training session, because with a training session, the trainer needs to be there and available. And so I decided to use other study models to look at this question. So I actually did three different types of tests. The first one was called a conditioned place preference test. In this test, you have two different environments, and the two different environments are differentiated by something. In the case of my study, it was by color. One compartment of the experimental apparatus was blue and the other compartment was green. For each animal that I did this test with, they would be in, let's say, the green compartment when they were exposed to their training sessions, and then in the blue compartment when they just had access to free food. And then the testing part of it is that they are allowed into both environments at the same time, and we track how long they spend in each environment without either of the two options being available. So they're kind of just in this empty space. The idea is that they will spend more time in the environment that they associate with being the most reinforcing. So if they really enjoyed the training sessions, they would hang out more in the green compartment, or if they really enjoyed the free food, they would go hang out in the blue compartment more. So it's an interesting way to look at their preference for one thing over another. The next test that I did was a choice test. So pretty common test out there to just give the animal a choice between one treatment or the other. So again, looking at whether they will choose between a training session or the free food. So once they make that choice, then that is their choice for that session. And then the third test that I did was actually called a consumer demand test. With this test, the idea behind it is that we want to look at how motivated an animal is to reach a particular resource. We're looking for them to do a specific amount of work to reach that resource, and we increasingly make it harder and harder for them to reach that resource, and we look at how much effort they're willing to expend to get to the resource. So in my case, I used narrowing doorway. As the doorway gets more and more narrow, the animal has to squeeze through that doorway to try to get to the resource. And the smaller the doorway that they choose to try to get through, the more motivated they are to get to that resource. With these three different tests, I was able to look at the question different ways and try to come up with some answers. I actually did it with chickens. I had 34 hens that were my wonderful study participants. I had the hens go through these different tests and then was able to compare each hen's response to one test over the other and to really kind of get into the nitty-gritty of it. So the results were kind of ambiguous, as often research studies can be. Overall, the results were that the hens didn't really have a preference for positive reinforcement training or free food. They really kind of valued them about the same. Of course, with each individual hen, each one came out with different preferences, but across the board, there wasn't really a huge preference for one or the other. At first, I was a little bit disappointed in this result. Scientists are not supposed to go into their studies with preconceived notions of the outcome, but in my heart of hearts, I had wanted them to really like the training sessions more. But after thinking about it more, we realized that the fact that they didn't prefer free food that much more than the positive reinforcement trainings actually means that they preferred the positive reinforcement training sessions almost as much as just getting food for free. That's actually a really great result because it means that they didn't find anything super aversive about the training sessions. And so where we can kind of take this result in terms of the training with our animals, we can feel really good about doing these training sessions because if given the choice between working with us and just having a free meal, a lot of times they will choose to work with us and that's a great result. And with 34 hens, I definitely saw a lot of variation, not only in learning styles, but in terms of preferences. You know, I was doing 3 different preference tests here. Certain things in the choice test where I wasn't positive that the hens had actually learned the task of making a choice. There are different variables to take into account. A lot of times the hens actually just picked the compartment on the right-hand side, regardless of what treatment was available to them there. And so there were questions of whether they have a right side bias and all of this kind of stuff. But there was one hen who actually for sure learned the task because 100% of the time she chose the side that had the free food in it, regardless of which side of the apparatus the free food was on. And so I knew that she knew what the task was and she certainly made her choice. That's a clear indication to me of what she wants. And so I think that that's a really good example of how any animal that we're working with at our job, in our home, in our own personal life, we need to think about the individual and really cater our interactions with them to what actually makes them happy and what they find reinforcing, even in terms of the enrichment that we might give to our animals. Contra freeloading is a phenomenon that has been demonstrated in a wide range of species: pigeons, Siamese fighting fish, gerbils, macaques, humans, maned wolves. All of these studies have been done with all these different species, and oftentimes they do find evidence of contra freeloading, but that certainly doesn't mean that every individual maned wolf is going to want to work for their food. And so as we're developing training programs and enrichment programs, we really need to not think just about these broad general concepts, but think about our individual animals that we're working with and really make sure that what we're doing is right for them.
Beautifully said, and absolutely fascinated by this, and so glad we got an opportunity to talk about it today. The research you did is so important, and thank you so much for sharing that. We will move on now, though, because I want to talk about something else very exciting, and that is the Animal Behavior Management Alliance, aka the ABMA, which you are on the conference committee of. Can you maybe tell us a bit more about what the ABMA is, what they do, where people can find out more about them / join, and what your role on the conference committee entails?
Absolutely. So the ABMA is a not-for-profit corporation with a membership comprised of animal care professionals and other individuals interested in enhancing animal care through training and enrichment. The ABMA is intended to be nurturing and informative and was created to serve trainers, handlers, and keepers of animals, irrespective of species, with information and assistance in the behavior management of their charges. So really, ABMA is continually striving to advance intentional and enlightened behavior management to improve the lives and welfare of all animals. The members of ABMA are amazing people who work at such a wide range of facilities or potentially are not even working in facilities. They're just very interested people in the animal field. And so it's a fantastic resource for anyone who is looking to get into the animal field, training or just working with them, doing enrichment, the scope of what the ABMA covers is quite wide. Not only does the ABMA host annual conferences where there are lectures, workshops, site visits where you get to go and see so many great things in action at really top industry facilities, but the ABMA also has what's called Collaboration. Collaboration is this amazing resource where you can see past conference presentations, workshops, lectures, all sorts of continuing or beginning education items for people who are interested in animal-related topics. And the ABMA really seeks to be non-species specific. So you can go and find out information about parakeets or dolphins or your dog. It's amazing really how so many people contribute to the information that is shared here. So we get a really broad perspective of things. During the conferences that are held annually, there are specific presentations that are given in workshops. And the committee that I'm a part of is the Conference Content Advisory Committee. What we do is take all of the submissions, all the people who submit their work to be presented at the conference, we go through the abstracts that they send us and rate those abstracts based on a couple of different categories, potentially how closely it relates to the ABMA mission of, as I said, continually striving to advance intentional enlightened behavior management to improve the lives and welfare of all animals. We will look at how technically competent the abstract is, so whether it really sounds like the author is using sound behavioral management techniques that the ABMA would want to promote, whether the ideas and concepts being promoted are actually new and novel and would be beneficial to the people who will be attending the conference, and also whether it connects to the theme of the conference. So the conference actually coming up next year in 2017 is in Cincinnati, Ohio, and the theme for that one is Back to Basics, Crossing the Bridge Between Training and Conservation. It's a theme that is open to interpretation, however you interpret that and how you can relate whatever work you're doing and present that in your abstract. That would be something that the Conference Content Advisory Committee would be looking at. And it's a blind scoring process, so we don't know where these abstracts came from, which facility they came from, or who the author is. Based on the scores, we make the selection for what presentations will occur at the conference. It's a great way to try to ensure that what is presented at the conference will be applicable to a wide audience, because the different members on the committee definitely come from very different places throughout the country, throughout the world, from different facilities, different backgrounds. So we all represent different parts of the ABMA community. We're hoping to really cater to as many people at once as possible. So to get involved with the ABMA, definitely coming to the annual conference is a fantastic option, but it's definitely not the only option either. You can go to their website, which is theabma.org, and look into the resources that are available there. In order to participate in ABMA Collaboration that I was talking about before, you do need to be a member, but there are different membership options. And so you don't necessarily need to be working at an animal facility right now. There are options for student memberships as well. So once you become a member, you open up a whole other realm of different resources that are available. But even without becoming a member, still, there are things on their website and ways that you can connect with people that will be hugely beneficial to anyone who is interested in getting involved with animals in any capacity.
Such great information. And thank you so much for sharing that, Annika. Such a great organization to be involved with. And for everyone listening, I will put a link in the show notes for you to check out and visit that website. Would that be best, Annika?
That would be fantastic.
Fantastic. Hey, we are sadly nearly at the end, but we do have a few more questions before we finish off. The stories and information so far have just been sensational. And they're not going to stop there, because we are moving towards one of my favorite parts of the podcast show. I wonder, before we get to that last question, could you potentially just share two or three more stories from your experience and some of the important lessons you've learned along the way?
Sure. So one of the lessons that I've been thinking about a bit, it's always really great to share all these amazing success stories, but I think it's also really important sometimes to hear about things that possibly weren't as successful, kind of as a way to give people encouragement to think about how to keep moving forward, even when things don't go quite as you want them to go. One example is a bobcat I'm currently working with. His name is Monty. He's a fantastic animal and very willing to learn, very engaged in our training sessions, but probably due to his past history, he has a lot of undesirable hate behaviors revolving around things coming towards him. So for instance, a target pole or any kind of pole that perhaps you would have a syringe on the end of for any kind of medication, that kind of a thing. Trying to do any of those behaviors that you have probably talked about a lot in terms of doing an injection or potentially getting a blood draw, those are very difficult for Monty. And so this was one of my main goals. This was what I really wanted to accomplish with him, was to be able to do his annual vaccinations totally unrestrained and voluntarily, have him just sit there for his annual vaccination. So I worked quite a lot on this and I broke it down into as many small steps as I could. I set him up in a position that I thought he would be really comfortable in, and I modified that based on what I was seeing and the challenges that we were having. And even after months of working on it, we were not succeeding. We had gotten to a certain place and then we regressed. And as much as I tried to break it down into little micro behaviors and keep it as reinforcing as possible, Monty was really telling me that this was not something that he was willing to participate in. Naturally, we needed to get him his annual vaccination. I finally needed to make that decision to totally change the direction I was going, instead of focusing on trying to have him voluntarily participate in the injection. I needed to focus on him voluntarily going into a squeeze cage so that then we could give him his injection in the squeeze. It hurt me a little bit to have him go into the squeeze cage, because in my mind, I don't necessarily feel like squeezing an animal is the most positive experience for them. But in order to successfully get Monty his vaccination, this was something that needed to happen. And so I was able to very positively get him to go into the squeeze cage and to make that aspect of the behavior a positive experience for him. And just from the trainer's perspective and my own feelings about it, it was a great reminder for me to not let my ego try to interfere with the behavior of the animal. My ego said, I really want him to be able to do this unrestrained. But because possibly my training skill wasn't to the level, or I just wasn't seeing what Monty needed, it wasn't working one way. And so if I had tried to keep pushing him that way, I think it would have become even more negative for him than just getting quickly squeezed and getting his injection and having it be over with. So I just think that that's an important lesson for new trainers, possibly for old trainers too, just to not be afraid to let go of a training plan if you need to. If it really is not working one direction, to not be afraid to just change directions, and then to still focus on making it as positive as you can, and not to beat yourself up over not having it be this perfect behavior that you had been dreaming of. So just to focus on making it as good as you can for the time being, and then to work forward from there. So another story, kind of to counterbalance that one, is my experience with training one of our black bears. Again, going back to annual vaccinations, this is something that can cause a little bit of stress sometimes at certain facilities and for certain animals. This was an animal who previously definitely did not enjoy his vaccinations. And in fact, anytime he would be touched with a stick or any kind of even mildly pointy object, he would make this very sad little squealing noise, possibly because of his past experience with needles. I definitely wanted to try to work with him and make with this a more positive experience for him. We did a lot of training, and I'm happy to report in that case that that training did work very successfully, and he didn't even flinch when he got his annual vaccination. But even moving further from that, months later, totally unrelated, he had a little bit of a growth on his neck, and our veterinarian wanted to do a fine needle aspirate of that growth to check and make sure that it was nothing that we needed to be concerned with. I was able to take the training that we had done in order to do the injection for the vaccination and generalize it to doing the fine needle aspirate. It was fantastic that we were able to do this procedure that was not something that he had been specifically trained for. Having an aspirate done is a bit different than having an injection done. He still was totally willing to participate, and it was a very positive experience for him. We were able to get the good news that the growth growth was nothing that we needed to be worried about. That was a very uplifting experience where the training really helped us take better care of him.
Cool. Hey, thanks so much for those. And you definitely didn't disappoint. They were such great lessons embedded within those amazing stories. Very much appreciate that you shared those with us today. As I said, though, this is sadly the final question. And for this one, I wanted to ask this time if you would take us into the future and share with everyone listening what you would like to see happen in the animal training world in the next 5 to 10 years.
You know, Ryan, I have been thinking about this question a lot, and I think that so many people on the podcast have already said fantastic things, and I believe that so many good things are happening in the animal training world already that I would really love to see a continuation of that. But actually, we already kind of got a preview in this podcast of what I really would love to see, which is actually taking all of the training that we're doing and being able to show non-animal training people the benefits of the training that we do, not just in terms of what we're doing with our animals, but in terms of how they can take that home with them, and not just to their pets, but also to just all the other people that they interact with throughout the day. Positive reinforcement is not just about working with animals. It's about working with people for sure. Just promoting that method of using reinforcement, being nice to people and animals and all organisms. That is really what I would love to see, is for us as animal trainers to help share these ideas that we are seeing such benefits with our animals, helping to share that with the people that we encounter in hopes that they will use it in every aspect of their lives.
Well, this conversation and this podcast is going to help achieve that, hopefully. So thank you so much for sharing those thoughts and feelings. And let's hope that that definitely 100% continues, as you say, because it's already happening, to develop over time. This has been so much fun. And as always, I'm just really excited that we've had this opportunity to reconnect today, to learn and grow together, and from you today, Annika. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show, and a massive, massive thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're very, very welcome. We all appreciate it. I hope that you out there listening to this enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed making it. As mentioned at the start of the podcast, if you haven't listened to the other episodes yet, you can find them and download them either on the website at www.animaltrainingacademy.com, or jump over to iTunes and find them there as well. Please share this podcast far and wide. The more we can disseminate this information, the better. Also, while you are on animaltrainingacademy.com, make sure to check out all of the other amazing resources on offer, including, of course, my labor of love to you guys, the 15 lesson animal training tidbits free online course. In the course, there's videos, written content, PDFs, audio, lessons on getting started, clicker training, target training, crate training, environmental arrangement, reinforcement, measuring behavior, riding shaping plans, and more. So head over to animaltrainingacademy.com and go to the free course section in the main menu and start learning today. For now though, we'll sign off for this episode. Once again, a massive, massive thank you for listening today, and we'll see you all again soon. Bye-bye.